The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 13th of June, 2025. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. And it's the end of what's been a really busy week on the show. And it's another busy 3 hours to finish things off. We've got a great mix of news, views, conversations, features. There's even a bit of live music thrown in there for your entertainment, I think. We have our Friday panel joining us very, very shortly. I'll introduce them. But I want to invite you into the conversation. 086 60 25000. WhatsApps and texts, that number will include your comments as we go. 07491 25000 is the number to give us a call, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And just don't forget, in case you've tuned in for the first time, you can watch the show at home on your smart TV or Fire Stick, or in your maybe you have a communal area in, you know, residential care or something. Stick us on in the corner too as well there. We're on the YouTube app Highland Radio Ireland, and you can watch us on Facebook and on X as well. Right, Dr. Joe Kelly, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning to yourself and to all listening in Highland Radio.
It's great to have you with us. Pat O'Connor, who is a Professor of Sociology and Social Policy Emeritus at University of Limerick. Still struggling with that word. I'll get there at some point. Good morning to you. And don't try and tell me it, Pat, because it's not going to work. I know it. I just can't say it.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, all.
Thanks so much for being with us again. And Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party. Good morning, Charles. How are you keeping?
Good, Greg. Good morning. And good morning to all the listeners.
It's great to have you with us. Just a quickie from you as a teacher, Joe. The 9 million pouch tender has been withdrawn. That created so much blowback for the government and so much controversy. And in its current form, it's gone. There aren't rules now whereby phone use needs to be restricted in schools. I think there's going to be some sort of a fund where schools can apply to draw down some money to implement that. It seems to be a complete mess as a teacher. What's your view? I mean, the details are only emerging this morning, but...
Where do you start with the education? Where do you start with everything with what government's doing at the moment?
Fair and balanced way, please.
In reality, with regards to the education, maybe we'll stay with that. This is what Norma Foley announced last year as a great solution to her problem. It was very simple, and we introduced it in our own school. Phones were banned, full stop. We didn't need 9 million to do that. But here's the real question. Why is the onus put back on the parents or on the teachers? Social media companies can be switched off between 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock during the day. The government licenses these companies. And if we want our students to be off them, then get these social media companies to switch off during
school
hours.
And get mums and dads to agree to that. That's the problem, you see. Often the resistance comes from adults, not children.
Yeah, well, it's like musical chairs. We want to find solutions for everything other than the real solution. That's the elephant in the room, the what's actually there. Again, we go back to the signage on all these bog roads. Like, we're doing something, by the way, but we won't put extra Gardaí out on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday night when most people are killed on our roads and when our roads are most dangerous. But what we will do is we'll put signs up on roads that nobody travels on, telling you to drive slowly. And again, that's what the pouch did. It was a solution to a problem that wasn't really the problem. And it was a waste of taxpayers' money. And we're going to be talking about that throughout the show. The amount of money that has been wasted. Simple, practical things can be done. But I don't think we have the competences in our government at the moment to achieve any of that. And across the whole civil service, there's a serious problem across all the stratas. And that sounds very negative. But we have to face up to the reality that what we have running our country at the moment across all strata is not fit for purpose, and we have to find another way. And if we don't, we're like goldfish. We're going round every 10 seconds with the same problem.
Yeah, okay. So implementation mechanisms will be decided by each school with flexibility to... In other words, the status quo is going to remain. You know, why not just say we made a mess up with the 9 million for pouches? Nobody wanted it. We thought it was a good idea, and now we're rolling back on it, but it's being framed in a different way. Pat O'Connor, comment from you in relation to this. With all due respect to Joe, I can't imagine a situation where social media companies would we can't even get flashing speeding signs out schools, outside schools switched off during the summer holidays. How in God's name do you think we're going to switch off social media, Joe? Pat O'Connor, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I agree with Joe in the sense that it was a totally daft idea. But I suppose, I mean, in a way, I think it's, in this case, it's not quite fair to blame the civil servants. I don't think the civil servants dreamt up this idea. This was a ministerial wheeze, right? And really, it was, it indicated a degree of meddling in the day-to-day life of the schools and a lack of understanding of what the real problem was. Or it was, I agree with you, it was a non-solution. But in this case, I'm afraid, I think is the politician rather than the civil servant that are the problem.
Yeah, Charles, were you in favour of these proposals?
Definitely not. I think when they first came out and you were kind of looking to see if it was April Fool's Day. My wife's a teacher. She's nearly 30 years experience. And I have children who are at high school. And the first thing is when it came out, they were looking at these pouches, that the proposed pouches they were going to use. And my kids came up to me and goes, oh, they've tried them before at concerts. They're really easy to hack.
Yeah, exactly. Ask the kids. They would have told you it was a non-runner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The health minister is... Sorry, go ahead, Pat, please. Yeah.
You have to wonder who had a relationship with what company producing the pouches.
But that's a full hour. That's a full hour somewhere else.
Exactly. Just a comment, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? Wonder. Unfortunately, history states that there might be something to what you've just said. Mm-hmm. Joe, again, what did you want to say there?
Well, but again, it's public knowledge that a minister for justice, the last minister for justice, her husband is an ABBV that does the transgender drugs. And then you wonder then who's putting through the hate speech law and transgender laws in our country. I mean, it's known that there's always a connection between the political elite and those that are going to support them financially.
Yeah, but we're a small country. We're a small country, and everyone's going to be connected to someone in the drinks industry, in the, you know, anything that's a wee bit controversial. There's connections everywhere. There's only 6 million of us, for crying out loud. Is there not always a connection?
There has to be. I think there's a standard required, and there's an integrity required. And in fairness to the history of our Donegal TDs, they've never had dirty hands in that sense. They've always acted honourably. I mean, if you just even look at Mary Colton, who was our Taoiseach, and she was impeccable. There was nothing against her character. And in fairness to our TDs across the history in this county, they've always acted with a very high standard. It's unfortunate that 90% of the TDs give the other 10% a bad name. Look, that's politics and that's business, and unfortunately that line is often crossed.
Okay, I'm going to take a quick break because I'm normally running a little bit behind on Fridays because I'll be so intrigued by what our contributors have to say. So stay with us, and coming up after the break, we're going to sort of reflect on the meeting between Oireachtas members and the Health Minister during the week, and a meeting coming next week between the Health Minister and doctors to see what the solution to the woes at LUH might be. Now, the Health Minister has agreed to meet with a delegation of doctors next week in response to a letter sent to her advocating for LUH to be the location of a surgical hub and for increased investment more generally in the hospital. On this show, the Minister seemed to play down the significance of surgical hubs and instead talked over an overall project to enhance the hospital, which it seems might be led out by current and regional management. But doctors remain resolute in their view that a surgical hub is critical to the future of key services in the hospital, such as ED, maternity, etc. Well, Deputy Charles Ward was at that meeting between Donegal Oireachtas members and Jennifer Carroll McNeil early this week. So I will start with you. You know, how do you frame that meeting, Charles?
It was a very productive meeting. Basically, every single elected member from Donegal, we're on the same page. It's a very unique situation where politically you would have a difference of opinion, but everybody recognises how underfunded our hospital is. And basically, this has got to the stage now where for the hospital to develop and grow, we need this surgical hub. We we welcome any other advancements, but the surgical hub is ready-made and ready to go. The surgical hub, if announced, would be 23 months away. Anything else is years. We don't have 8 to 15 years. We've got to develop the hospital now.
Did you get the... I'm not sure if you heard her comments subsequent to that, where she talked of, you know, surgical hubs being about carpal tunnel syndrome and this, that and then, and that whilst not sort of saying she's going to back the Sligo proposals, sort of saying, I kind of got the feeling, and I don't want to misrepresent her, that we were being set up really for the surgical hub to go to Sligo and the promise of something greater for Letterkenny. But I have to listen to the 171 doctors. They say we don't have the time. You've said that already.
Yeah, look, it's like this. You have to listen to the people on the ground who are working in this environment every single day. They know how it works. They can see it. They can see the lack of investment within LUH, and that's why it's very important that there's a coordinated effort. There's certain parts of her interview with you yesterday I listened to late last night. There was key words throughout that, you know, the lack of a coordinated business plan and, you know, a development plan. It indicates to me that she's looking at a long term, which is absolutely no good to us. We need to make sure that we have a surgical hub. Otherwise, anything else means our hospital is downgraded. And I think if you asked any of the 171 doctors, they would agree with that.
It seems that a surgical hub would stall the slide, potentially, whereby that slide would continue in the absence of the surgical hub and any of these grand plans. Because we also have to remember that the recommendations going to her really go through Tony Canavan's office, and he's been in his position for really quite some time now. So what might give us the impression that his attitude might change towards proper investment into Letterkenny University Hospital?
Well, if Tony Canavan is doing his job, facts and figures are going to be key. And the facts and figures that we should be entitled to, that we will have, will indicate that the hub should be in Letterkenny. Now, ideally, there should be a hub in Sligo and Letterkenny. But if it comes down to a business plan and facts and figures, then the only place that the hub should be in Letterkenny. We are geographically isolated from everywhere else compared to Sligo. Sligo is within a 90-minute period of other surgical or other hospitals. We are in a unique position where we are isolated. If you're in Carindonagh or Malin Head and you need that surgical hub and the services off it, you have to go to Sligo, which is 2.5 hours away. It's unacceptable.
I also thought it was interesting in the comments that the approach is still what's best for the Northwest. That hasn't worked for us. And she did say that a few times. What we really need, it would seem from what we're being told, is that we actually don't think, because Sligo is arguably the heart of the Northwest, and that seems to be the solution for everything. And it sort of sometimes talks to a lack of understanding of the actual geographical nature of the Northwest, and that we are actually a peninsula of the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah. And you see, when you hear the wording of the statement, what she said, I took a lot of things out of that single campus master plan. You know, Galway was once in this kind of pickle before, and we can, you know, so what they're basically trying to sell you is that eventually you could have what Galway have. That is 15 to 20 years away. What we need to do is stop it now. We need the surgical hub, a ready-made model that will bring staff in, which will produce more services for Donegal. This is vital. Mm. Anything else, it's a downgrade.
And basically, just for listeners too, at the moment, it would make it easier to hire into Letterkenny. At the moment, we're incredibly reliant on locums who are in and out, you know, and how they provide care. I'm not saying it's ineffective, but follow-ups and all that type of stuff, you know, you need, that hospital needs to be able to attract full-time staff that are there all the time, that can follow the cases. And as I say, I'm not critical of locums, but the hospital needs to be more of an attractive place to correct the staffing structure there. I've lost you there. I'll come back to you, Charles. I think you might have muted. Dr. Joe Kelly, what's your view?
Look, I mean, I pass by the hospital, and if you just even look at the facade of the building and the shape,
it would need help.
Sorry, Charles. Sorry, Charles, you cut out there. I'll come back to you. I just wanted to, had to bring Joe in because your audio cut out there. Maybe your call was coming in or something. Sorry, Dr. Kelly, continue.
If you just see the facade of the building, and what people know in Donegal is the population of Ireland, or in Donegal, sorry, has increased between 2016 and 2022 by over almost 8,000 people. Has the investment in our healthcare increased to the same amount? That's about 5%. Has it increased? Have the bed capacity increased that much? This is an ongoing problem. And, in the darkness, you begin to see the stars in the light. And in the darkness of our surgical issue at the moment, we're beginning to see the real issues, and we're beginning to see how much Donegal is being left behind. And it's not just the surgical matter, it's across the board. You talk about Donegal being a peninsula to the 26 counties or the 25 other counties. Only 6 miles of Donegal touches the Free State. We don't matter in Dublin. That's very, very simple. And I've talked to you before, we don't even have an MEP for the first time in the history of, since 1979, our first MEP along the border. We don't have any representation. We're a forgotten county, we're a phantom county, we're a limb. And again, we've been taken for granted again and again and again. And here in this issue, the surgical hub is one example where we have the facts and the figures to show that we deserve this. But you know what? Donegal doesn't matter. Because you know what? They'll give us back a representation to support our government time after time after time. And the people of Donegal will forget. And so when it comes to the next cycle of elections, this is what happens. But having said that, I'm very confident that our TDs working together will get this over the line. They know that they have to. And don't forget, along the border counties, there's 16 TDs. That's enough to hold the balance of power. And it's time, Charles, and your colleagues along the border counties started to fight for the border counties. We can't keep putting up with this phantom idea that we're taken for granted and that our county is at a second grade. And that's what it is. And it's unfortunate to say that. But again, we will forget.
Okay, Charles, you addressed him directly before I bring Pat back in. I think you wanted to respond to that, Charles.
Yeah, look, it's like this. The 5 Donegal TDs are fighting, okay? We are isolated up here, okay? Ideally, we would like it to be in Sligo and in Letterkenny. Now, if you look, Greg, I don't know if you recall a few weeks ago when Betty Holmes was doing her protest, she had a map, and on this map is where all the surgical services and all these other acute cancer care services are. We are isolated. Okay, now I understand you're on about the border counties and all that, but up here, we are asking for equal treatment. Nothing else, nothing more, equal. So where the rest of them have equal treatment, where Galway is very close to Sligo and Roscommon, that we are isolated. And that's why all the Donegal TDs recognise this, and the senators, and that's why we have pulled together on this. Now, we need to pull together for this to make sure this comes to Donegal. More importantly than anywhere else, as far as I'm concerned.
Pat O'Connor.
Well, I suppose I'd make two comments. Obviously, I don't know what's happening on the ground, right? But I suppose for me, the puzzle is around these surgical hubs, because as I have understood it, the problem is the shortage of staff, including surgeons. And in a way, creating these surgical hubs for more routine operations. The question in my mind is, will this cause a shortage in the emergency area? And certainly there seems to be some evidence that this is what will happen. In a way, so that's the first point. So I'm not entirely, it's a quick way of making waiting lists look better. I'm very clear on that. But what will be the knock-on effect in terms of the development of these surgical hubs, unless staffing is improved in all other areas? I think that's a problem.
Yeah, it is, and talk, but the whole idea is, unfortunately, we're hemorrhaging staff from Letterkenny University Hospital, yes, as it is, and the medical professionals seem to be of the view that the provision of a surgical hub would actually make it more attractive area for medical staff to move up to and work full time, and there'd be more opportunities. And I'm not sure of the interaction between working in the ED and the surgical hub and how that might be attractive, but there certainly seems to be an indication that it would actually bolster staff rather than put further pressure on us.
Well, Greg, and the second point, sorry, the second point I want to make is, interestingly, Waterford, which has been designated for a possible surgical hub, but in most other decisions, for example, heart, all sorts of other decisions, Waterford has been neglected and the focus has been on Cork. So there seems to be somewhere a map, okay, of ideal developments for the health centres, for the whole health service across the country. Mm. And obviously, Letterkenny is not on that map.
Yeah, but the problem is we have to drill into what that is. Is it for medical reasons, or yes, are there people with influence within the health service that are cherry-picking where these places go for whatever reason they might choose to, but not based on evidence and science? You know,
totally.
And I think a deep dive into why Sligo University Hospital was recommended for the surgery club would show that, because there's no statistical evidence to put it above Letterkenny. I'll come back to you, Pat. Charles, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, right.
Charles, you wanted to come in.
Yeah. Really, in reality, it's a real simple one. If you're proposing a business plan, you'll come forward with your facts and figures, okay? And in Sligo, the business plan would come forward and the facts and figures will be there, okay? And then Letterkenny's business plan would come in and it would clearly show that the only place for it to go is in Letterkenny. So when Tony Canavan is looking at these facts and figures that should be made public, the whole thing, there should be a transparency there, and he hands them over to the minister who has the sign off on this. It's her word at the end. So Tony Canavan can say whatever he wants and have his own opinion.
Were you not at the meeting when Tony Canavan said it was based on population, at least partly?
And this is what we're saying. His figures are not accurate. He needs to realise, and he needs to be more thorough and realise that the facts and figures indicate that the hub has to go to Letterkenny. There's no other way about it. And when he hands them facts and figures over, I think that she looks at them, she already knows that she has to make the right decision, and the right decision is for it to be in Donegal.
Pat O'Connor too, though, I know you're not privy to the interview with the minister yesterday, but she pointed out that only one is open. So, I mean, you know, I understand that people are saying that, you know, these are shovel ready and open in 21, 22, 23 months, but she's talking about the limited sort of scope that they have, and the fact that only, you know, one is opened anyways. I don't know whether her view on surgical hubs might be different to previous ministers.
Well, I don't know that.
Yeah, but
I'm still waiting for Sláinte Care to be implemented. Mm-hmm. You know, there seems to be even very good ideas which have support, cross-party support, seem not to be getting implemented. How long is Sláinte Care on the go? But I'm slightly concerned about Charles's comments on Tony Canavan's figures. Like, in a way, They're either right or wrong. Population figures are from the CSO. You know, you.
But
can't,
we have doubled the population now. Yeah. If you want to start talking then about, I don't know, I wasn't at that meeting, but say you want to factor in care that's provided in Sligo. Well, already you see many people from Donegal have to go to Sligo for stuff they shouldn't have to, injection in their eyes, etc., things like that. Are they counting them in? Is that what's skewing the population? I don't know. I haven't seen the business case. But, I mean, to use the fact that maybe Donegal people are being forced to go to Sligo to increase the argument for a Sligo surgical hub, if that were part of this decision-making process, it's a double insult. Joe Kelly, come on in on this.
I'm just laughing. And I think we're being foolish as a county and as a people and as our politicians. If they think that the business case has even been considered for Donegal, it's not about facts and figures. It's about policy. And Donegal can be forgotten. Why worry about Donegal? It doesn't need a business case. Just forget about them. And that's going across every sector. For example, we talked before about the rail investment, that there was to be 37 billion spent, 37,000 million, and less than 900,000, that's less than 1% percent would be spent in Donegal. It doesn't matter. When it goes to roads, we don't get the share of money, despite the fact that we have so many roads in Donegal. When it goes to the medical centres that we're talking about now in the surgical hubs, it doesn't matter. When it goes to all the different sectors, we don't have rail, we don't have roads. It doesn't, Donegal doesn't matter. And does it take this issue to make us realise that they don't need a business case? They are going to make these decisions independent of business cases. Okay.
Just one question in relation to that, and I want to ask Charles, because I can't really get a straight answer on this. Did Letterkenny University Hospital put forward a business case for the location of a surgical hub there?
Well, according to the health minister, they haven't put it forward yet.
No, but I mean, I'm on about to sort of the mid-northwest Sealta. Let's just keep calling it Sealta. Like, we know Sligo has a business case and it was signed off on. Did Letterkenny University Hospital propose a business case, or was it, did that work top down? I don't understand how that...
Well, this is what we're saying. According to herself, she has stated that they're waiting on the Letterkenny business plan. Well, but we need to realise something about Sealta. It has not been productive for us at all in the Northwest dealing with that organisation. And we have to say it the way it is. You know, we're in an emergency situation, Letterkenny, and we've got to realise this situation is it needs investment. It needs investment now. I'll give you a quick analogy. Basically, if you were a football club that was successful and you're a small football club, but you need to grow and develop to keep things going, and the more successful you become, that is what's happened. We have got surgical team in Letterkenny that are stretched to the limit, that need support and need help. And the only way that does is the surgical hub. And what the surgical hub does, it allows the hospital to develop. It gives them time.
All right.
They must put forward a business case. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm amazed, appalled. You know, if Letterkenny Hospital hasn't put forward a business case and Sligo has.
Yeah, well, it's a direct question, which I really do think we need to get an answer to. Go ahead.
But again, it's a question of, have they put forward a business case? Maybe they weren't given the opportunity to perform
that's
business.
Part of
maybe
it,
this
it?
Came from the top down, and that would be my feeling on this. This is a decision that's made independent of our hospitals and of the staff there.
I've just got a clarification. Letterkenny University Hospital did submit a business case. It was considered, and Sligo's business case was chosen over Letterkenny and signed off on regionally by the HSC, and it is that which will be forwarded to the Minister for Health for consideration.
So
to part of that is, if that's the case, then we have to go on facts and figures. And if we're going on facts and figures, the Health Minister is the one that signs off on this, and the facts and figures will indicate that the hub should be in Letterkenny. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, but key questions need to be asked. On what criteria? On what basis is that decision made? Yeah. What are the key criteria? Mm-hmm. In a way, like, for right or wrong, you have to nail them on the detail, on factual detail.
Factual
only go so far. 100%. But if it emerges that the criteria are X, Y, Z, those need to be published. The data, as Charles has said, needs to be published. And then, in a way, if they're caught in an embarrassing situation, that they've made a decision which is out of line with the criteria and the facts, at least it is all clear.
Well, that's right? Pat, on the show this day last week, I said we need to see the Sligo business plan, we need to see the Letterkenny business plan, and we need to see the rationale for choosing Sligo over Letterkenny. And you've said the exact same thing there. That is the basic that we deserve. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes.
You see, now, what's going to happen is, when the surgical teams and the doctors go down to visit the health minister next week and they present to her, there is no doubt about it in my mind. She will see exactly what we've been saying, and it's coming from the people on the ground, the people that are keeping Donegal alive and well and ticking. These people are overly stretched, and when they go and present to her, as far as I'm concerned, and I do believe she is listening, and I do believe that she's aware of the situation. But she has control over the situation.
But there's one thing people aren't factoring in this yet, and they haven't even been in the conversation, and I wonder when they'll show their hand. What do the people of Sligo think? What do the consultants in Sligo think? What does the management of Sligo Hospital think? Because I'm sure they will have a counter argument as to why it's very important that they have this. Now, we know they've submitted a business case, but is a delegation from Sligo going to end up going up to the minister the following week? You know, they're sitting on their hands at the moment. Sorry, they're keeping their powder dry at the moment. Their voice is yet to be thrown into this. And if there's only one, there's no guarantee Letterkenny's going to get it, because Sligo's already been told they're getting it.
But there it goes. But as we talk about again, our geographic location, we are basically Alaska when it comes to this. We are in a unique situation where we are not 90 minutes away from a surgical hub in certain parts of Donegal. And that is putting our citizens, our Irish citizens, health at risk.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, this is what we're elected to. We're in there fighting for the rights. And Donegal is forgotten. And we have to stand up and say, this is enough. We need investment in this hospital.
Now, the government planned to extend rent pressure zones across the entire country, and it's going to be fast-tracked now, with the law change expected to be in place within weeks. Initially, some of the changes were announced with the commencement date of the 1st of March next year, while other changes had no specific date attached. However, the government has now clarified that the plan to bring the entire country under an RPZ will be done as a matter of urgency. The major shift in rental regulation was announced by Housing Minister James Brown earlier this week as part of plans to attract more private investment into the rental market, aimed at boosting supply while also enhancing protections for renters. This to prevent landlords from increasing rents in areas that are currently... Sorry, the reason they brought all this forward is to prevent landlords from increasing rents in areas that are currently not protected in the interim period. There was this fear that between now and March, you ramp up your rents because you know what's coming. Well, anyway, Pat O'Connor, do you think these measures will make more rental property available in, you know, I suppose more rural counties like Donegal? And will it lead to an increase in supply in these areas?
Absolutely not.
Oh, I didn't know where that started off so positively and took a turn in the next word.
Go ahead. I mean, in a way, one of the property people agreed that it was highly possible that landlords would leave property vacant between now and next March. You know, is this going to make for more availability of property? I mean, it has been described as a Flann O'Brien effort, the whole housing plan policy. It's just ridiculous.
So you make rents higher, so it's more attractive for people to come in to invest, to build properties. At what point does that trickle down to more affordable rent and more properties in counties like Donegal? I can't see it, but I presume that's my ignorance.
No, I'm sorry. I can't see it either. And the whole, I mean, waiting till, okay, in making the whole country a rent,
pressure zone.
I mean, that's only going to affect, they say, about 17% anyway. Deferring things until next March means that of that 17%, what proportion are actually going to leave properties vacant in
hoarding
order to
it.
Be able to avail of the special conditions? I mean,
or evicting people,
intellectually interesting,
or trying to evict people so that you can list your property at the higher price after.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. I'll come back to you. Joe Kelly, exacerbated by this one too, I take it.
Look, it's the problem of a generation, one could say. Think of this. Since 2008, 800,000 young people have left our country. And one of the reasons they've left, it used to be they went to go and look for jobs and for work. Now they're going looking for housing because they can't be housed in their own country. And this is a problem that's going on. And it's back to what I said earlier. These are problems we had 10 years, 20 years ago, and we're still going to have them in another 10, 20 years' time.
Is it not the case that simply we need to build more houses? We need to let people build on the N56. We need to allow people to build on their own land. We need SIs. We need the council going in, building lots of houses. We can't rely on private pension funds to fix this problem, can we?
I think there's a dishonesty again, and there's a dysfunction within government. And what I mean by that is, what I mean by the government is those that are at the very, very top. Do you just take, for example, in the Glenties electoral area, in the last council, the previous council of this one, five or six houses were built for the whole 5 years. If you look at Fulcara today, you can't build any more houses in the town of Fulcara because the sewage system isn't up to scratch. And you can't blame the council. You see, the problems are more fundamental. It's like, not
how could you approve any properties, for example, in the Milford area? They've just had their hose pipe ban extended till the August bank holiday, and it's piddled rain all week. So how could you, in all consciousness, approve any housing in an area whereby there's insufficient water?
Yeah, and so look, and so there's water, there's other sewage, there's other ancillary items that have a problem. And again, the government is not having a national policy of investing, bringing up the standards necessary to build the housing. And just let me point out, for example, history shows us after the fall of the German, the East Germany in 1989, one American company came in and built 18,000 houses in 6 months. This can be done. It's been done across the world. China, another example of being able to do this, where they built warehouses, they put all the toilets into one warehouse, the doors into other, windows into other, and they went building a strong government policy of building. But we don't have that. The drive isn't there. It's not in the government's interest to solve the housing problem.
But they are committing to building, what, 40, 50,000 houses a year. That's what you're talking of. That's the plan.
We're talking about a lot more than that. I don't believe that. Look, Greg, let's be honest here. Let's get down to brass tacks. When you buy a house for 300,000 or build a house as a young boy or young man or woman for 300,000, it's not 300,000. By the time you finish paying your mortgage and ancillary fees, you're talking about 600,000 euro to have a house. The cost involved, there's too much money, there's too much tax to be gained. The banks are making an absolute fortune. The government are making a fortune on every item that's taxed, building products, the prices of them. There's too much to be gained by the government in taxation. If the government real about trying to build housing, let's remove the VAT from building products to a very low standard where young people could afford them to build their own houses. And may I just add one thing, Deputy Ward will understand this because of the MICA. This government, or the last government, introduced what they called a concrete tax that you and I don't have to pay, Greg, because we have our houses built. But for every young boy and girl in the future, they're going to have to pay this concrete tax as another hidden tax put on the burden of the young people. So the housing problem isn't a housing problem. It's a problem of the way we're looking at how to solve this. And I don't think that we are sincere as a country, as a government, in trying to resolve this problem in an honest way. And I think it benefits the government to keep the problem going and going and going. And now we're going to split. Landlords are bad and the government's good.
Well, that's already done. I want to set this up for you, Charles Ward, is that, say, for instance, in terms of our ambulance service, we have sort of an urban model that's employed in Donegal to our disadvantage. In terms of policing, we have an urban sort of policing model that's now employed in Donegal, which doesn't necessarily work in a sprawling rural community. And now we have a sort of a city housing solution problem that is not nuanced at all for Donegal, say, for example, because of our specific pressures we have because of DCB, right? So have you any optimism at all that this rent pressure zone implementation in Donegal will lead to an increase in properties, not just for first-time buyers, first-time renters, but also those in defective concrete blocks, the thousands coming down the line potentially that will need alternative accommodation?
Prior to Easter, I'd been looking at rental properties because I'm always constantly looking out because of the number of people that'll be going forward for the defective concrete scheme. And in Donegal, there was 28 properties for rent. So if this scheme was working and we had 200 people going ahead tomorrow, it's on its knees already. So for example, we're talking about boys and girls in the future. There's going to be no future for boys and girls building houses in Donegal when a house in Donegal costs between 300,000 and 400,000 and we've got the lowest disposable income in the country. You know what I mean? We're sitting here having this conversation now. As a father of four, and you're a father too, Greg, and I wonder the future. am I going to be going out the back, going back building again to build a shed for my kids to live in? Because that's the way things are going. You know what I mean? We back in 2009, there was a critical government mistake made when the country basically lost out to Troika and all this carry on. What happened was we had a workforce of about 160,000, 170,000. We're back at that level. But the demand for housing has continued beyond that.
God, do you remember at that time the audit of ghost estates? Do you remember we had houses lying empty that just needed plastering and doors? And we didn't know what we were... There was talk of tossing. I think some of these ghost estates were tossed.
They were. And you see, back then, we should have kept at it. We should have had a plan in place. But government policy, they were panicking. And basically... For ourselves in the Northwest, we didn't see any real production or movement, and we haven't seen it return to the way it was until about 2018, 2017. And that's when the defective concrete prior to that was starting to rear its head. And what we have is the perfect storm. But part of that is the fact is that investment in property, we need to realise something. 30,000 houses plus they're looking at this year, they're not going to be anywhere near that. I look at one thing since I've been elected. I don't look at commencement notice. I look at completions. You can't live in a commencement. You can live in a completion.
No, but there was a rush of commitment. There was rush of commitments last year because they incentivized it, and those houses never progressed. I'll come back to you, Pat. The situation we find ourselves in this country in terms of housing, and I don't want to be negative, but for some reason we pay some of the highest mortgage rates. We need massive investment in our electrical infrastructure to actually meet the need for these houses. At the moment, ironically, 20% of our power is used by data centres, yet it's the electricity bill payer today that has to fund this upgrade, apparently. And also, too, in Donegal, for an example, there's water restrictions in Milford. There's critical water levels in Buncrana, the Twin Towns, Letterkenny and elsewhere. We don't have the infrastructure to build. We're already paying some of the highest mortgage rates in Europe. And now we're going to have to foot the bill for the ESB to upgrade the network. Like, there's an awful lot there, Pat, to overcome before we even start thinking about delivering housing at any level, surely.
I mean, it is very discouraging when you look at the levels. I mean, Ishgairn is a problem. The electricity, I agree with you, the whole power situation and the encouragement of people to go electric on everything when we can't already supply our existing needs, completely mad. The failure of the government really to employ a few demographers and forward plan on population. Dreadful. So, but in the meantime, so I agree with all of that infrastructural. But what is paradoxical and maddening is that the government has money. People have savings. Do you know, like we have something like 156 billion in savings. And so the possibility of using that, not simply relying on, you know, these nebulous corporates, but using that to basically begin to drive the infrastructural improvement. But this is a long-term prospect. And in the meantime, I suppose the one thing that strikes me, you walk around any town and you see a whole load of derelict properties. I'm afraid I like watching, you know, the basically the programmes on telly doing up derelict houses, buying them for really good value and young people putting a bit of effort in and restoring them. But even the grants for those local, small, micro initiatives are not really up to very recently. You had to pony up the money yourself before you got
your 80, finished
the job. Before you
but,
got
but ironically, we do love that scheme here in Donegal. We're the biggest uptakers of the derelict stroke vacant property. So when you get a good idea, and that is a brilliant idea from government, it does deliver housing. You just have to give people a hand, and it's worked really well, it seems.
Well, it is, of course, a short-term limited solution. But I think it would be far preferable to put some more money and effort into that, given the interior of most of the towns are dying rather than putting it into this crazy rent pressure zone policy.
Okay, Joe, it looks like we're going to have 15 billion extra in tax this year that we didn't know we were going to get. No, so this is above expectations. So why aren't we repurposing that 15 billion money that we didn't even know we were going to have instead, we're trying to court international pension funds to solve our housing problems. That's a genuine, honest, not a loaded question. Why not fashion that 15 billion euro into real delivery?
Look, we're looking for hope and hopeless leadership. And that's just, we have to call a spade a spade. And I agree with Professor Pat there about the savings, 150 whatever billion. Imagine the government was to say, look, we want that money, we'll give you an interest rate, and we're going to use that money to rebuild the houses or to build houses for Ireland, and it's guaranteed by the government. We don't need these vulture funds. We have our own money within our own country to do that. But you know what? That wouldn't be what the leadership want. There's too many hidden agendas and too many people with their heads in the trough. And just let me put it like this to you, Greg. You're asking politicians to sort out a problem. Politicians that turned up for 1.5 hour in December of last year and claimed 560,000 expenses in the dial for 1.5 hour in the dial. And you're asking these people to now, and I mean by the leadership, the government, to sort out the housing problems. There's too many of them with the head in the trough.
Unfortunately.
And we're looking from hopeless leaders.
Okay, Dr. Joe Kelly, I must leave it there. Thank you so much for your time. Lovely to chat to you. Professor Pat Kelly, I feel our time was too fleeting, but I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care. And Deputy Charles Ward, take care of yourself as well. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
You too, Greg. All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.